Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Public forum.
Public forum is an opportunity for the public to get up and speak about anything they'd like to discuss.
The chair again requiring an additional vote different from the tabling again is incorrect and in violation. I'm not asking, I'm requiring as a citizen for this entire meeting to be rescheduled with no priority once the applicant gets all the information required as the board requested. There is
Thank you for your
evidence.
Comments. We'll go to the next speaker, please.
There is email evidence.
Ma'am, thank you for your comment.
We have gone over before.
Ma'am.
Yeah, I understand.
Thank you. Thank you for your comment. We go to the next speaker. You're holding up other people.
The public.
Ma'am, please go
James,
to the next speaker.
We have done this several times before.
Ma'am, so you think it's okay for you to go over the clock?
When we've done it in the past,
ma'am,
yes. We have no rules.
Ma'am, thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Well, if Sam hadn't have talked so darn long, we'd
thank
have plenty
you.
Of time.
Thank you.
It's maybe not the best ever, but there is a part of me, I will say this, now that it's been decided that James Calkins will not be the county commissioner anymore from District 3, and therefore will not be chairing any of the meetings at all. You know, he's not been the actual chair, he's been the vice chair, deputy chair, I forget the exact word. Anyway, but you know, when Sam Parker's not there, he'll run the meeting. And it's only happened a couple of times. But him and Sherry Chapman, and by the way, James has a really good, like, angry, stern dad voice. Ma'am, ma'am, ma'am. There is a part of me that I'll miss the entertainment value. I won't miss the not great leadership and the inconsistency and the nonsense. But the entertainment value alone, there is a part of me that will miss all that when he is no longer the county commissioner. Meanwhile, Cynthia Smith, and that was Sherry Chapman, a Pitchfork Posse founding member and a routine participant and a bringer of the accents and the phrases. Cynthia Smith, someone else?
First of all, before I read this, finish this out, what's frustrating is each and one of you on this board seems to think the citizens are stupid or not knowledgeable the way you treat people out here in the public. We're not stupid. We have knowledge, and we see a lot of things that's happening, and that's why we come and try to do what's right for the best of our county, just like you guys. I'm not pointing out just to you, Mr. Smith. I'm just saying in general. Your face showed everything.
The general level of dissatisfaction amongst the people who show up. Now, remember, the people who show up at the meetings typically are the ones who are more aggravated. You know, it's like the people who file the reviews of the customer service online are not the ones who are, like, happy. The happy ones just go home and use their product, right? It's the unhappy ones that, you know, grab their torches and their whips and, you know, try to make a big deal out of it, typically. And that doesn't mean they're wrong. I'm just saying, you know, just human nature, okay? The happy people don't show up. So do they represent everybody? I don't know. We saw the vote, and the vote was very anti-incumbent, that's for sure, except for Colton Wright, who was reelected resoundingly in his district. But, of course, James Calkins and Sam Parker were resoundingly diselected
you know, thrown out of office by the voters in their districts. In any case, the conversation they were having was over the Jubilee Project. Okay, remember the Jubilee Project? That was this, what, 2,400 acres is what I have in my head. That would be, maybe it's 2,200, somewhere in that vicinity. City-size development, planned community, think seaside or something like it. I mean, it's not really exactly that, but it's, you know, that's kind of the closest you have, where, you know, schools and activities and everything is built inside, so you don't ever really have to leave to go anywhere to do anything. And then, you know, but people will, of course, because they'll go to their jobs and whatnot. But then, you know, it's agricultural land now, and the builder doesn't want to build on all of it. So there's efforts to change the way the zoning works to be able to have it higher density in some parts as an offset against other parts, not changing the total number of homes. One per acre is the rule in agricultural land. And then there's been a request by Jubilee at a very, 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 very long meeting recently to increase the actual density. I forget what the number they were going to was, but it was pretty high. It was going to maybe like 8,000, like four to acre, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, dramatically increasing the number of homes that could be on that property. And there was a long, dramatic meeting. There was a lot of angry people. I have never cut the audio from that. I mean, if I wanted to, it was like 60 cuts, you could do it. It's a long thing. They pushed. It's going to go past the election. The short version is that the board got, the advisory board for the zoning board kind of got, I don't know. In the end, what happened is nothing. Okay, got tabled. The request got tabled, and it's going to come back again, you know, in the new year, basically, when there's a new set of commissioners, and we'll figure out what we're going to do with it then. But this issue of Jubilee has been this running word battle between, you know, basically Ron Reeser, the guy who represents the developers, is one of the owners, I think, of the property. Anyway, he's the one who's the public face of it, showing up trying to explain, like, hey, you know, if we build a development where the people are, you know, not having to leave that area in order to go do their stuff, then you can actually have people in density without taking away too much agricultural land. You can have people in density without impacting traffic too much because their trips are all going to be internal to the property. Anyway, so Colton Wright was talking in general about that project. This was after the zoning board meeting where they tabled it, okay, but that was the subject of conversation.
And I've got some concerns about the Jubilee project as well. I've been very vocal in past votes that I've supported the idea of the project. In my comments, I mean, I supported the town center rezoning on Berryhill there on that commercial piece. I think the idea of the project is the right thing to do for the community. I think the project itself does actually protect the rural area. You know, we've heard the term keep the country, and it's currently zoned as Ag 1, so just make it one house per acre. Well, folks, that is death by a thousand cuts. Because when you got 22 homes coming, I can assure you if that was zoned differently and they were coming asking for 22 homes, people would be up in arms over 22 homes or 2,200 homes. But that's what's allowed right now.
And what he said is, I mean, I think he's right, okay, and at least two important regards. Number one is one of the arguments is we got to protect the country, okay? And so if you are going to protect the country, that means that you've got to do what you can to keep people from turning farmland into residential, right? That's the main threat. Yes, some commercial, but commercial follows the residential, so it's really the residences expanding out. Well, the way you do that is by allowing density and height. You know, there's so many people that are going to be here. If they're all spread out, one house per acre, that takes up X amount of land. If you allow them to be 4 an acre somewhere or more, then you reduce the amount of land that they're going to eat up out of agriculture. I mean, it's a simple math problem. So that's one thing that a place like a Jubilee with a higher density and concentration of people would do if you allow higher density. He says, but even if you don't allow higher density, if you just allow it as it is, 2,200 homes, you think that you could put 2,200 homes out there and people wouldn't still be screaming about the impact on the roads in that vicinity? And the answer is, of course they would be. I mean, 2,200 is not, but that's entitled right now at one per acre. Like, they could do it right now. So he's right. It's not as though the shifting of the density from one part of the property to another part is really the issue, although it is maybe for the neighbors who live in that, like, right in proximity to that, like the Fowlers who've been making noise about this for over, like, as long as I can remember, a year, at least 2 years maybe. But, you know, just the fact that it's 2,200 homes potentially by right, that's, nobody's going to be excited about that.
So I think the idea of the project is smart. I think what they're trying to accomplish is a good idea. I'm just not sure that right now it's either the right time or we have all the right circumstances put in place.
Which is fair. And certainly regardless of whether it's one per acre or three or four per acre, the surrounding infrastructure is not there. Now, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, you wouldn't have, let's say, 7,000 people in a month. You wouldn't have 30,000 people in a month if the density stuff wound up getting approved eventually. It will take time, and of course, roads can adapt over time. But nobody is under any illusion that the roads in that area are gonna be okay without massive improvement in the infrastructure, right? And so that is certainly a challenge. But he says, look, let's bring it back in the first of the year. You know, the meeting itself was run in a not great manner. It's a hard thing to do. You got basically the giant mob there's all angry. You know, really, really angry at the zoning board meeting. And then you had this problem of demanding an up or down vote, which is kind of done by the petitioner on behalf of Jubilee. And should they have been granted that? There's some sort of technical things that don't really matter for the overall conversation. James Calkins, though, I don't get to say it a lot, but every once in a while, I think James really does say something. He said more right things since he lost the election than he ever said in the prior 3.5 years. It's weird. It's like losing the election decisively freed him up to say smart things. I don't know if he felt he couldn't say them before or if he didn't think of them before, or I don't know. But it's been odd as I've been listening to the meetings that he's actually had better points since losing than he ever had before.
But I would say that the times this board has made the biggest mistakes was when you had a mob come up here and demand something be voted down.
And he used the example of the RV park, you know, out on the beach, and he's right about that. And I said that at the time, like, you know, you're going to cater to the 100 people who are in the room who are angry, and in the end you're going to make a bad decision and they're going to do something even worse. Lo and behold, that's exactly what you get. Which, by the way, I totally understand. If you're on a board, you're on a county commissioner, city council, and you got a bunch of angry people showing up, all wearing the same shirt, hooping, hollering, yelling, screaming, to the degree they're allowed to do that. It's a very difficult thing to stare out at a group of 100 people and tell them, no, we're going to do something that none of you want us to do. That is hard. It looks bad. But remember, representative democracy is not do what the group in the room says. It's do what you think is right based on the fact that not 100 people elected you, but in Santa Rosa County, 210,000 people elected you. 210, I think that's about right. 200 something. It's right around just over 200 recently. So you represent this whole group of people, most of whom aren't present. And there's this sort of sampling bias that makes you think, especially because of the emotion they bring, that the people who are in front of you represent all those other people. They do not. They don't. Or at least you can't know if they do. That's the challenge. They represent an interest group that comes. And it's not that interest groups don't matter. You know, what you do to that street matters, what you do to that beach matters, what you do in that neighborhood matters. Of course. But it's very hard to stand in front of a group of passionate citizens who are all screaming for your head and remember that they're not even 1% of the vote. They're, what, a tenth? No, a half of a tenth, you know? a 20th of a percent of a vote. I'm just trying to quick do the math in my head, how little they represent the actual county. Anyway, I always like to leave you with a little bit of unnecessary drama, so here goes.
My thoughts are, I mean, you had a resort, and respectfully...
Whether you agree or disagree with Commissioner Calkins, please do not have outbursts from the audience. It's very rude. Ma'am, please. He has his right to speak just like you do.
I ain't calling no clown,
ma'am.
But now I can.
Not from that seat, you won't. Mr. Chairman, if people are going to continue to outburst like this, I just don't understand it.
I would have adjourned the meeting and walked out, but the MSBU thing's kind of important. You know, I have to, it's kind of like a farmer. I got to deal with what I got here. I got a deputy there that's being paid to keep order. I don't know, at some point, like, I expect him to be a little bit proactive about it. So, but I'm going to lean on his assessment. I guess he feels like we're comfortable at this point.
We had Sam Parker show up by then, and, you know, or at least was running the meeting at that point. And, criticizing the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Deputy for not doing enough to stifle the dissent, which he's a former Scammy County Sheriff's Deputy. That was kind of an interesting one. Also,
I'm saying that we have tons of projects that come before this board a lot of times, And there is a lynch mob mentality where they intimidate people, they scream at people, they scream at the board. It happened at the zoning meeting. There was guys on their side, and they were spitting and yelling at them on their side, and they were voting with them. I mean, that's what happened at the zoning meeting. I mean, there was no order. I mean, I felt so bad for the chair lady. She was a great chairwoman, good woman. But what she had to deal with from the unruly crowd was horrible. There was no order. And I don't blame her. I blame just the disrespect of some people. Not all. Most people were okay. But it's the few that just don't act proper.
You know, there's some truth to that. Like I said, that kind of mob mindset, that catering to the mob, and the way the meeting was run, it wasn't great. But I will say this, just as a one sort of takeaway from all of this conversation, the people who are against Jubilee, and I actually think it would make a very good project if we could figure out a way to put the infrastructure around it. To me, that's the real issue. Because everything else about the project makes perfect sense. Putting density in a place where we're going to, you know, it's going to be a lot of people, okay? And doing it smart, wisely, that actually makes sense to me. The problem is that the infrastructure is not there on the outside. On the inside, they'll build it themselves. On the outside, I think that's the challenge. But here's the thing. The people who are against the Jubilee concept, okay, I think those same people look at something like OLF-8 and say, well, let's, if they are thinking cross-county, and not everybody's paying attention to both counties at the same time, let's listen to the show. And they're looking at OLF-8 and thinking, yeah, let's put a school on there, let's put some activities, and let's put some residential, and let's put some commercial, and let's put some light industrial, and let's have it all in one place, and let's kind of plan it, make it smart, and make it a wonderful community when it's all done. You mean like Jubilee? Just without the industrial? Like, that's the idea, is plan. You know, so you can't really have it both ways. You can't complain about a lack of planning on the one hand and then complain about too much planning on the other. It just, you kind of got to figure out what's the right answer. I think you could, what you could say about Jubilee or something like it is, it's a really good idea. Are we prepared to have it in that particular place? And if we aren't prepared to have it in that particular place, what are we going to have instead? And maybe what you get instead is even worse because it doesn't have any of the good stuff. All it has is residential, which is, you know, kind of a waste of an opportunity. 526 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
You've got a Pepto predicament, moviegoer.
Hey, I can hear your stomach grumbling.
Sorry, I ate that entire tub of popcorn with extra butter.
You overdid it, and now your movie has turned into a blockbuster bellyache. Undo it with Pepto.
When you have nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach,
diarrhea.
Pepto chewables provide fast 5-symptom relief, so you can focus on the action on the big screen instead of in your stomach. When you overdo it, undo it with Pepto. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
When it comes to your dream home, at Pinair Credit Union, we think you deserve to be picky. So buy that perfect place that just speaks to you. Or build a new home just the way you like it. Because at Pinair Credit Union, we deliver affordable and flexible home mortgages and construction loans designed to make your next home a dream come true. Find all you need to get started at pinair.org/homeloan. Whether you're buying or building, Pinair Home Loans fit you perfectly. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Get the midday news live with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, 11 to 2, before Guy Benson on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I come to save the day.
Just a young gun with a quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my old life behind.
Good morning, 528 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday morning, VP debate night. Ooh.
David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David,
I'm glad to see how excited you are for
that. No, actually, I'm looking forward to it because I think it's going to be probably the best debate we'll see the entire season. But
that's not saying a lot.
Well, fair. But I actually am hopeful it's going to be entertaining. I mean, it won't mean anything, but it's going to be fun. I think it'll be fun.
It might be. Well, members of the International Longshoremen's Association at ports from Maine to Texas have now walked off their jobs, of course, just ahead of the holiday season. J.P. Morgan says the price tag for the port workers' strike could be about $5 billion a day for the U.S. economy.
It's chump change. It's a third of an aircraft carrier a day. We can easily afford that. No problem.
Yeah, fair enough. The White House says it won't be intervening in this strike.
Well, why would they? I mean, why would they do something that's important for the economy? Why would he
why
use it?
Why start now?
Yeah, why?
Pete Rose has passed away. He finished his playing career as Major League Baseball's all-time hits leader. Of course, he was also banned from the sport for betting on games. He passed away Monday at his home in Las Vegas. He was 83.
This is so frustrating. They're going to put him in the Hall of Fame now. I no doubt they're going to put him in the Hall of Fame now. And then they can say, see, we fixed it. You didn't fix it. You fixed it when he's dead. You denied the man his due when he was alive out of this petty nonsense that something completely unrelated to his performance as a player, as a coach, and betting. And there's, you know, you can disagree about the betting. You can disagree about who he bet on. I don't really care about any of that. He was one of the greatest hitters in all of history. He's not in the Hall of Fame over a technicality. It's the stupidest thing ever. And if they fix it now, they're a bunch of self-righteous, pompous words I can't say on the air. Because, again, to deny him while he was alive his due, it was wrong.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Thousands of port workers walking off the job at midnight.
We're always willing to sit down when the right numbers hit. They know what the number is.
Harold Daggett, president of the International Longshoremen's Association. Fox's Brooke Singman has more.
Port employers, represented by the U.S. Maritime Alliance, said they proposed a nearly 50% wage increase to the International Longshoremen's Association, in addition to improvements to health care and retirement plans, but it was rejected.
It's the first strike from the union since 1977. A CBS vice presidential debate. Tonight, the big out between Tim Walz and J.D. Vance.
The mics stay on at all times, although the moderators can mute them at their discretion. No opening statements. Both candidates have 2 minutes to answer questions and are allowed 1 minute for rebuttals. There will be no audience in the studio as well.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got 75 degrees, partly cloudy skies in Pensacola today. The Pensacola man has been sentenced to 22 years in federal prison on drug and firearm charges. 42-year-old Willie Frank Gordon was arrested recently after being previously convicted on federal charges of possession with intent to distribute methamphetamine and cocaine, possession of a firearm in furtherance of a drug-related crime, and possession of a firearm by a felon, also a federal supervised release violation. Well, it's a news headline you've probably seen a few too many times. Another fatal motorcycle crash. And Santa Rosa County Sheriff Bob Johnson says far too often crashes are caused by riders that don't follow the rules of the road.
Motorcyclists need to drive with their head on a swivel and not be speeding and not be breaking traffic laws as well. And I see a lot of that. You'll see these guys on these you know, Japanese bikes that will be doing 120, and they won't even stop when you light them up because they know you can't catch them. So, and people like that die a lot.
And Johnson tells News Radio another issue is distracted drivers. He says a lot of people are texting and driving or doing other things that take their attention away from the road. He says if somebody's distracted, there is no way they'll be able to see a motorcycle on the road. Disaster recovery centers are now open for those affected by Hurricane Helene. The Florida Division of Emergency Management announced three of those disaster centers have now opened in Hillsborough, Manatee, and Sarasota counties. Also, points of distribution have been opened in areas impacted by Helene. Two Tampa Bay sports teams joining forces to help hurricane victims, the Tampa Bay Rays and Tampa Bay Rowdies, announcing yesterday that they're pledging $1 million to support communities that were affected by Helene. Initial contributions have been made to the United Way Suncoast, feeding Tampa Bay at Tampa Bay Beaches Chamber of Commerce and the city of St. Petersburg's relief efforts. The Alabama National Fair is returning this week. That started 70 years ago in Montgomery. That'll be held at their fairgrounds there in Montgomery by the Garrett Coliseum starting on Friday. Vice President Kamala Harris says the federal government will be doing everything it can to help those who were impacted by Helene.
The devastation from Hurricane Helene is immense. Millions of Americans are without power. Thousands of families have lost their homes. Entire neighborhoods have been destroyed.
Harris visited FEMA headquarters Monday to thank workers for their response to the deadly storm. Of course, so far, at least 120 people are dead across six states, with a third of those deaths in western North Carolina around Asheville. Still about 2 million people without power. 534 News Radio, 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. Plenty of sunshine today with just a few passing clouds, high near 89 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 69. Keeping that sunny weather around for your Wednesday, high near 89 degrees. Low Wednesday night near 69 degrees. For Thursday, rain chances increase with a 50% chance of rain, high near 85. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEART weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. It is 5:35. Your next news at 6, and we've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Tens of thousands of Verizon customers across the country were hit by a service outage yesterday. Data from Down Detector shows that reports topped 100,000 shortly after 11 a.m. Eastern Time. The FTC said it is investigating the cause of the outage. Service has since been restored for most users. Artificial intelligence chip startup Cerebras Systems has filed its prospectus for an initial public offering, with plans to trade under the ticker symbol CBRS on the NASDAQ. Cerebras, who competes with NVIDIA, says on its website that its WSE3 chip comes with more core memory than NVIDIA's popular H100. Dock workers of the Longshoremen's Association Union on the East and Gulf Coast have begun striking after failing to reach an agreement with port ownership on a new contract. The union said it is fighting for better wages. Nearly 50% of all U.S. imports pass through the East and Gulf Coast ports. Futures are mixed. That's Your Money Now.
Hey, Northwest Florida, Dave Ramsey here. I want to tell you about my friends over at Gulf Coast Air Care. Owner Todd St. Ors and his team focus on the indoor air quality side of HVAC for the people who want comfortable, healthy, and energy-efficient homes and workplaces. Gulf Coast Air Care can help you with dusty, moldy, or leaky duct systems, hot or cold rooms, and odors and humidity issues. So, if you need duct cleaning, duct repairs, or air filtration, you should call Gulf Coast Air Care today at 850-934-2768. They've been trusted members of the community for over 30 years. And remember what Todd always says, if you don't have a good air filter, you are one. Call Gulf Coast Air Care today at 850-934-2768 or visit them online at gulfcoastaircare.com. And be sure and tell them that Dave Ramsey sent you.
Are you ready to experience healthcare that truly cares? At VIP Care, they're not just your primary care provider, they're your healthcare partner. Specializing in primary care for adults 65 and older, VIP Care's compassionate doctors focus on prevention, creating personalized care plans to keep you healthy and active. With four convenient clinics in Pensacola, same-day appointments, and a dedicated on-call provider available 24/7, VIP Care makes healthcare easy and accessible. Visit getvipcare.com to find a clinic near you.
When you find out you're pregnant, everything changes. Every choice now impacts a child's future. Research has proven that smoking weed while pregnant can hurt babies. Cannabis passes through the placenta, leading to brain development issues, anxiety, poor academic performance, and physical problems at birth. Any use of THC while breastfeeding is also dangerous for babies. Your child or grandchild's future starts now. Don't put it at risk. Say no to marijuana while pregnant. This message is sponsored by the Florida Department of Health, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
It's that time of year again, hurricane season.
News Radio 92.3 provides informative, local, and dependable coverage to make sure you're informed of any major storms coming to our area. Before a storm, we keep you informed of the storm's track, where food and gas shortages occur, and where you can get sandbags. During the storm, we stay on the air to let you know where the storm is headed, where power outages occur, road closures, and other storm warnings. Then after the storm, we get you the information to help you recover from the storm and help your neighbors. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable hurricane headquarters.
Good morning, 539, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. What is that, Tim Walz theme song for tonight? Is that what that is? Anyway, Kamala Harris's theme song. Anyway, yesterday we had a really good chance to talk with State Representative Michelle Salzman from District 1. That's the northern, like, geographically, it's like the northern 90% of the county, but, you know, it's kind of the northern, I don't know, half, population-wise, a little bit more than half. Anyway, we talked with her about an opinion piece she wrote in the PNJ regarding driver's education and also her experiences in the Big Bend. She'd gone over for hurricane help. Michelle Salzman, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So what I intended to talk about, you have been over in the Big Bend area, and I want to talk about your experience working on hurricane relief. Before we get to that, the reason I had texted you yesterday to see if you wanted to come on and talk about was your opinion piece you had in the PNJ that essentially says that we ought to have driver's education as a mandatory course in all of our high schools. Because, good Lord, kids can't drive. I know that's a short summary of your piece, but that's basically the thrust of it, right?
Yeah, you could say that. And a lot of conversations I've been having across the state is, listen, it's not even just about the kid knowing how to get from A to B. Those driving courses teach defensive driving.
Yeah.
And oftentimes we have near misses as adults. We go, oh, my gosh, that idiot just pulled up for me. Oh, my gosh, you know. Because we're trained skilled drivers, most of us are, because we have experience. And so when you take that driver's test in your basement or in your bedroom with your best friend giving you answers, you're not necessarily getting the same instructional experience that you would get in a classroom. And so we know that we would be saving lives, not just kids' lives, but also the lives of other drivers. And you know, the opinion piece is more of a vision, obviously, or not obviously, if you don't know, listeners don't know, we are not going to be able to mandate driver's ed for every youth driver going into, into a car. Not yet. We are looking at a step scenario. I've been meeting with the chancellor because the secretary, Manny Diaz, was like, hey, great idea, Salzy. Let's figure this out. And I was like, oh, great. He goes, by the way, go in this conference room. I have everybody waiting for you. I was like, okay. So we're doing it. But truthfully, every single person I've spoken to about this, not a single one has said, well, that's a bad idea. Not a single teacher has said, well, I don't think that's good. And even in that room of chancellors, all former principals, they were literally tears in their eyes sharing individual stories about how they lost a student in mm-hmm. high school from driving, whether it was a drunk driver where they didn't drive, you know, they didn't know how to react, or it was themselves where they were distracted or whatever. So it's just an excellent idea, and I can't even take credit, to be honest. This came from Martha at Eagles Talon, who runs something called ABATE, which is a motorcycle safety organization, and then Scott Lunsford at, you know, everybody knows Scott, the tax collector, because he's like, man, these kids don't know how to drive anymore. We need driver's ed back. So my friends always have the best ideas, and I try to get them through. But I'm really grateful that the News Journal published that so we can bring conversation and just
Absolutely.
Really discuss it, because we're looking for creative ideas, which we have some creative ideas, but we're looking for creative ideas to implement it as big as possible.
You know, it seems to me like the way the law ought to be written, if I'm writing it, and you will help write it, is that you can't get a license until you're 18 unless you've gone through an official driver's ed course. You know, and then, you know, that's not a mandate for every student, but that is a way of highly incentivizing it, right? Because you're exactly right. Getting them from, you know, zero to really safe through experience. I mean, I can't imagine where I would have been as a young driver. And we were all bad drivers when we were young, but how much worse would we have been if we had not had driver's ed? And this is what I don't understand is when did we abandon driver's ed in school? Because that was so normal for us growing up, but now it's not even in school. When did that happen? Do you know?
So we were discussing that. We don't know why. We don't know why it was taken away as a requirement. And we didn't really dive into the why. We just stopped right there and said, well, nobody knows why, because it makes sense to have it. Let's figure out how to do
it. So weird.
I can tell you that we have a lot of people. We even have driver's ed in Escambia County. We have driver's ed. It is offered in summertime. Keith Leonard loves the idea, too, but I promised him, not that he, you know, demanded, but I did tell him, listen, we're looking at creative ways. We don't want to pull away from instructional time. We just keep piling on the mandate in the district, you know, across the state. Now you got to teach financial literacy. Now you got to, you know, and yes, we should be teaching those things, but we have to be cognizant. There's only so much time in the day, so we have to take care of our teachers and that instructional time. So where we've landed, should anybody be curious where we're at currently, and it can change. We want to do it after school, like you would do a band or a book club or a, you know, beta club or, you know, language, whatever. We want to try to do it an after school program. All the school districts do it, and not just one time, because like right now we have a driver's ed in Pensacola. You can't get in.
Yeah.
You know, that we don't have, there's not enough space, and we're only teaching a handful of kids compared to the hundreds that are getting, or probably thousands getting those driver's license each year. So we're looking at doing it as an after school thing, so we don't interrupt instructional time. And we're potentially, we're looking at, it's my idea, so parents, you can kill me later, but I think it should be self-pay. So if it costs the district $300 to do a class for you where you actually get to get in the car and do drive time and all the things that are meaningful, well, then you should pay, like you pay for band or you pay for whatever. And that might not be where we land, but that's kind of where I landed initially, because the Speaker Desmond Perez, he and I were talking about it too. He said, Salzy, what about the fiscal? And I said, we're all concerned because our budget, even though we have a lot of money, if you look at the forecast, we're going to be negative money if we keep spending the way we spend. So we will have to address all of this, and we certainly don't want to add a new program like this and then take away so much money. But
well, I agree with you. I mean, the time, both instructional time and also the cost. But if you think about it the other way around, how much money are parents going to be spending on insurance increase, on car costs for the kid?
Yes.
You know, and that's, they're not paying that yet. You know, and so there is a sense that, well, you know, $300 is pretty cheap to be able to get a kid a lot of safety instruction, which is ultimately, this is not about some kind of a mandate. It's really about making our roads safer for our kids and for the rest of us. That's why I so completely agree with you about this. In Santa Rosa County, they do this really good defensive driver training program that you just can't get in because there's so much demand in so little spots. Anything like that would also, of course, be super helpful. I know a lot of that would be taken care of in a driver's ed course, but even so, you know, what they do is above and beyond. One last quick thing before we get to the subject of the hurricane that I wanted to mention is I don't feel like I really understand how the average 16 to 18 year old becomes a driver these days. Like I taught my two, or I'm teaching one, I taught one of the other ones, but because they were homeschooled, but I literally, like, how do you become a driver when there's no a driver's ed? You know, like it's a weird problem, right?
Yeah. And that's the question that is the question at hand. And that's the question that organizations like ABATE and people like Scott Lunsford are asking.
Yeah.
These kids are coming in with driver's licenses. They have no actual practice. The parents, you know, give them keys, say, okay, drive. And then are they doing enough? Like there's not even, to our knowledge, recommendations to parents. Okay, you should do this with your kids this often, or, you know, it's just more like a free for all. We do have the test you have to take, you know, and then you go in and you get your permit and you do have to pass the same test that you had to pass 20, 30 years ago. But we all took that test. You're driving in circles for a couple of minutes. You have to stop at stop signs.
Nothing.
Very, very minimal. Which, you know,
you get a boat. It's harder to get a boater's license.
I was literally just about to say, if you were to go get a boater license or a scuba license, you would fail at it because you're required to have so much instructional time. That's so funny.
Okay.
I was literally going to say that.
Sorry to steal your line. No, but it's true. So, well, I'm with you, and I will advocate for it, and we'll talk about it more as we get closer to session and all that. But, you know, I want to let people know that you had written that piece, and I wanted to bring some attention to it because I'm kind of dumbfounded that we're where we are. You know, and that we haven't been thinking more about how did we get here and how can we make it back to where, you know, they have better experience. I did want to talk for a minute at least about your experience at Big Bend because you were there. You were there yesterday and you just got back last night and you're going back again, what, tomorrow? Is that right?
Yeah, probably early in the morning. I partner with the other lawmakers and all across the state. We have needs, as you know, all across the West Coast. And we've partnered, we're doing it regionally. So I'm running region one, you know, this region of all the way to the Big Bend. And then we have other folks that are the point people for the other regions in the state. But for us, we're Big Bend. And, you know, I've been through so many of these and I always go help in disasters. It's just part of who I am. And every time I go there, I'm like, oh, no big deal. I'm so used to this. And then the first hug comes and they're crying and you're just like, oh my God. And then the emotions come and you just feel so like you're there, like you're a part of it. I mean, it just overwhelms you, and then you feel so compelled to do more. And but they're very grateful to see us. You know, when I got there, we were 48 hours in past the storm. And if y'all can remember, Ivan, 48 hours past the storm, you still couldn't drive down 9 Mile. I hear you can't drive down it today. Go ahead and blame me. It's okay. It's my road. But it's just an overwhelming feeling of everything is gone. But within 48 hours, we've cleared all the roads. You know, the guardsmen have been phenomenal. We're able to get to the homes and really see and assess the damages and the casualties. And, you know, the first call to action I had was hygiene items and cleaning supplies. We brought, it was probably closer to $10,000. I was trying to be really moderate in my number when I posted about it. But we brought a truckload of items, and we delivered it from Jefferson County all the way down. So we stopped in different areas and gave them what they requested. And then I got a call to action on the way home last night, and they were like, we're going to open school soon. We need school supplies and kids' clothes. We, you know, these kids literally have nothing. And I was like, okay, when do you need it? And they said, we want to open the distribution Wednesday morning. I was like, okay. All right. So today,
let's go home and do some work.
But it looks worse than, you know, what you imagine. You know, you see it on TV, mm-hmm. but when you're in person and you see the bill, I was driving down the interstate, or not the interstate, it's a main highway, and a half of a house was on the side of the road, but there were no houses within a half a mile. Like, there were no houses in it. So somehow or another, a part of a house was in the middle of the road. Mm. I mean, it's there were linemen. I mean, I have never seen so many power lines down. And I talked to other guardsmen and FDLE, and they all said the same thing. Like, we've never seen this much damage with our trees, but it's just all the way down. Like, for an hour straight, you're driving, it's trees down every, like, you know, 25 feet on top of the power line. So just linemen all the way down, you know, pulling the trees off, restoring power. But it's inspiring and sad at the same time. So I'm honored to go and help and support. But lucky for me, I have the time, you know, because I'm not doing anything.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things.
It blows my mind. What do we do, Andrew, you're the same way.
Never do anything. I did want to say one of the things we've been featuring this morning is that as bad as it has been in Florida, of course, we're all watching North Carolina and Eastern Tennessee. And, you know, the fact that the governor is sending resources to another state because we know how to do this and we know how bad their situation is really a statement of how bad it is there and how much we are able to. Nobody thought this was coming to North Carolina. I mean, despite all the warnings that we all kind of saw might have, they didn't understand what was going to happen at all. And so I appreciate that. I certainly appreciate all the work. Just a couple of notes. I had a bunch of texts come in and I wanted to let some people, some what they said. Several people, we love her. She's the best. Thank you. Somebody says, please tell her to look at the Texas teen driving model. Somebody else says Tate actually has high school driving during the school year. And somebody else had said here, I don't mean to open a can of worms, but they said, this is great. This is wonderful. What can you do about getting a mandatory driver's training course for senior citizens?
First of all, I wrote down all those notes. Yep. The Texas I will look at, and the Tate one might be the one that the superintendent said we have this. So
okay.
But Keith Leonard will be in lockstep. I will not file that bill without my superintendent going, okay, Michelle, we can do this.
Yeah.
I love Keith very much, but that's funny. I don't know about the mandatory elderly. I love that, but I'm one of those. I'm like an actual like super conservative, so I don't believe in government mandates. And so even this conversation is really hard for me. But I mean, our babies are dying. I have people dying in my district, people dying in all across the state. And how can we help these kids? How can we make the roadways safe? How can we make the walkways safe? So just trying to find reasonable guidelines and structure for these babies so they grow to be great drivers. And
yeah.
Oh, and by the way, I want to go back to this, Andrew, because you hit on it, and this was our point too. 300 and something, and this was a number we just came up with off the back of a napkin. It could be 200, it could be 100. But if you take $300 and you do that test or you do that class, within a couple of months, you will have saved that on your insurance. That the savings you get from that class is crazy big.
Oh, that's a great
on your
note.
Insurance.
Yeah. Because insurers know that kind of classroom and applied experience is a big difference, just like we should as parents know that that would make a big difference in their safety when they get on the road. The last thing you want is, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-olds learning while everybody else is driving and they're on in. I agree. And the savings, you're exactly right. That's a great point. And all of that. God, don't even get me started about the cell phone thing. You're exactly right about that, too. Michelle Salzmer, State Representative for District 1. Thank you for the piece in the PNJ. Thank you for talking with me about it this morning. Thanks for what you're doing for the Big Bend area and keeping us informed. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
5:54 here on News Radio, 55 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News.
Join the Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Atlas Oyster House, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters, tomorrow at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. They'll be discussing Rosh Hashanah at Jackson's, Atlas Beverage Class, Harvest Dinner at Angelina's, flavors that forge the South Dinner at Jackson's, holiday parties, free martinis at Jackson's, and more. That's all tomorrow at 9.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions, 850-437-1620.
Boogie Incorporated, the Gulf Coast leader in DJ entertainment, is celebrating their 45th year.
And they're just getting started.
If you're planning a wedding, employee party, class reunion, school dance, or an outdoor event or festival, why not use the best for less? Call Boogie Incorporated at 850-438-1660.
That's 850-438-1660.
Or go to boogieinc.com.
Remember,
wherever Boogie goes, a party is bound to follow.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
News Radio Pensacola is your trusted source for hurricane coverage. We have a team of experienced broadcast experts who are dedicated to keeping you informed about the latest weather conditions and forecasts. We'll provide you with up-to-the-minute updates on any developing storms, as well as safety tips and information on how to prepare for a hurricane. So for the latest hurricane coverage, stay tuned to News Radio Pensacola on AM 1620, 92.3, 95.3, and on HD Radio at 98.7. We'll keep you safe. When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WEAR-TV, News Radio Team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
There. I was at about 6 there. You don't want to see me go to 10.
Good 7, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Oh, man, I just saw what has to be the most effective clickbait headline I have ever seen. I don't know how. I haven't clicked on it yet, only because I'm waiting to have a moment to explore. But the headline reads, you ready for this? Hold on, I gotta get off my screen where I was looking at this for just a second. The headline is Yahoo Life. This is the most unhealthy fast food burger in America, according to a new study. Click, click, where? Can I get it here? Where do I go? It's the best ad ever. That's what, if you were a burger joint, you know, that's the billboard you should put up. Rated most unhealthy burger in America. You would get all of it. Oh, it's an In Country Living magazine, too. Well, where? I mean, I'm looking. I'll tell you what. David Wayne has got our headlines, and I'll come back.
Don't keep us in suspense, Andrew. I'll tell you, I'm
trying to find it while you're talking. So you talk, and then I'll have an answer for you.
All right. The man accused in the assassination attempt on former President Trump on his Florida golf course has now pleaded not guilty. Ryan Ruth was in federal court yesterday to be arraigned on charges, including attempted assassination of a major presidential candidate. And former President Jimmy Carter turns 100 today. He was born October 1st, 1924. He's currently in hospice care. All right, what do we got on that burger?
Okay. So they actually, there's a chart with numbers and stuff. And going from the top five, the Sonic cheeseburger is number 5, most unhealthy. The Carl's Jr. Famous Star with cheese is number 4. The classic smash burger is number 2 or 3. The jalapeno and cheese water burger is number 2. And number 1 is the Five Guys cheeseburger.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.